This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Inject fuel.
Hello, new business fans. I'm a Smith called Keith, host of The Fuel, the new business podcast brought to you in association with The Advertist, the new business development platform for creative, marketing, and communications agencies. Now, the current COVID situation has increased the focus on all new business people to do more than just make sales. It's required each and every person to dig deep into their mental reserves to produce short, medium, and long-term strategies for their companies. These strategies always rely on the new business person to be empathetic and informed on their prospects' corporate and product marketing activity, because everything's changed and what was normal 5 months ago has become redundant now. So you need to be on top of your game, and that involves knowing who to talk to when, and that's where The Advertist comes in. The Advertist is designed as a critical part of the new business sales cycle to help do a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of research, data, news, people moves, tenders, mergers and acquisitions, crowdfunding, and VC activity. Visit The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com, that's theadvertist.com, for a free trial, or call the team on 0203 356 3717 today. Now, this week, we're looking at the world of public relations with an exclusive interview, looking at how the PR industry's trade body, the PRCA, has managed to establish a new office and build a client base in a new continent in the middle of a pandemic. Not an easy feat by any stretch of the imagination. But before we do, let's check in with Jeremy Davis, our resident new business sage, who's got his telescope out and is doing a bit of horizon scanning.
For a job description for a new business role these days, and the likelihood is you'll come across the phrase horizon scanning, which has become fashionable amongst agency owners in recent years. Essentially, it means identifying future market sectors that may become hotbeds of opportunity due to changing market dynamics, legislation, or some other form of disruption, except it involves more gazing meaningfully into the middle distance and frowning than the job used to require. Presumably it comes from the USA, like most of our business jargon, where the analogy works better because of the more exciting and sometimes dangerous meteorological phenomena they get over there. In Britain, horizon scanning is a much less exciting affair. The only thing you're likely to see on the horizon, of course, are clouds, or possibly Richard Branson. At least until climate change overtakes us, or NASA's new mission to Mars inadvertently awakens some ancient Martian civilization and we get invaded by aliens. So, horizon scanning, definitely a good skill for new business people to have in their armory. It's frustrating, though, that the prospects sometimes don't have their own eyes on the horizon. My most notorious such experience concerned the deregulation of the legal sector in the late noughties, or Tesco Law, as it was colloquially referred to. What this important piece of legislation meant was that any brand, from major supermarket to, say, a professional services firm, could in theory launch a range of legal services, thus disrupting the legal sector and potentially putting a load of law firms out of business. Clearly, the answer to this challenge was that all the law firms needed to up their game on marketing. Ergo, here was a huge potential market opportunity for a branding agency to ride in like a knight in shining, possibly even embossed armour. Embossing was very big in logo design at the time, and mop up a steady stream of design work. Armed with a Financial Times article describing the changes to the legal sector's Big Bang, I presented my plans to the MD of the agency I was then employed by, got his buy-in, assembled a list of law firms, and began a campaign. Trouble was, I was a little ahead of my time. First time that's ever happened. As most of the small to medium law firms I was targeting didn't even have marketing people, or if they did, they weren't senior enough to actually control a chunk of budget, and tended to regard Tesco Law as a curiosity rather than a threat, so long as they could continue buying overpriced dinners for their clients and getting the odd referral. Now, where have I heard that type of new business tactic before? In truth, we did get a pitch out of it, and even managed to hold a well-attended seminar on the topic, but it was all a bit underwhelming. The classic example of putting too many eggs in one basket without fully considering how many I needed for my omelette, and whether I should try and make a few different varieties of omelette just in case this one didn't work out. In the event, it wasn't so much a big bang as a damp squib. Tesco clearly decided that Tesco Finest Legal Services wouldn't fit within the range architecture, and hardly any big consumer brands decided to take the plunge, not even Richard Branson. In fairness, he had his sights set far above the horizon at that point, firmly fixed on the final frontier. Another venture that, at the time of recording, hasn't taken off as planned.
Why are you doing what you're doing? If you're working for an agency where digital technology or digital, or you don't work in tech whatsoever, is it worth your time and resources to invest a lot into learning those disciplines, or are you better off taking a backseat on that and investing time and efforts into somewhere else? And that's a discussion that businesses and individuals need to have with themselves, and then hopefully they just know that I'm sure one of PRCA's 150 training courses will cover whatever aspect they want to get involved in.
The Public Relations and Communications Association, or PRCA, is the very embodiment of what a trade organisation is supposed to do. It's not just a figurehead business that kind of pays lip service to its members. The PRCA is a full-on trade organisation that's constantly interacting with a huge membership, somewhere north of about 12,000 in Europe, as well as providing crucial government-level communications on an international basis. Now, most of the UK's PR industry is connected with the PRCA, and if they're not already a member, they probably will have benefited from any one of a number of non-partisan industry-level opportunities that the PRCA creates. Now, my introduction to the PR industry came about in 1987 when I joined the team behind the launch of PR Week. We were based in these Dickensian offices in Fleet Street, and I was thrown in at the deep end of the nascent PR industry swimming pool, and very quickly found that organisations such as the PRCA were absolutely crucial to helping establish public relations as one of the three main marketing disciplines. Today, many of my clients are PR agencies. So when I heard that the PRCA was busy opening up a new division in Latin America, right about the time that the rest of the world was shutting down, I needed to know who on earth was responsible for taking on this monumental task. Enter Isabel Arrowsmith. She's smart, she's a great ambassador for the industry, and she had an hour or so to talk to me about the PR industry in the UK and North and South America. So please sit back, pour yourself a strong coffee or a glass of Malbec, depending on what time of day you're listening to this, and enjoy me and Isabel Arrowsmith putting the PR industry to rights. 4, 3, 2, 1. So let me start the show with a question. How do you set up a trade organization in a foreign territory that speaks a different language on a limited budget in the middle of a pandemic when your entire audience is prioritizing their own survival above yours? That was the challenge of my next guest, Isabel Arrowsmith, who until last year was cosily ensconced in the London offices of the Public Relations and Communications Association, or PRCA, which is the world's largest and most influential PR and communications membership body. It turns out that coordinating the national efforts of the various work groups within the PRCA wasn't enough of a challenge for Isabel, who tabled the idea of helping to establish the PRCA in the Latin American territories, and then took it upon herself to get it done. Having set up the outpost at the end of 2019, she found herself facing the additional challenge of doing all of the usual tasks that require many a sleepless night in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. Yet she still keeps smiling, and for those who've never met her, will soon be caught up in her trailblazing optimism and glass three quarters full, never say never approach to business. And let me just say, for all of you business developers out there concerned about how the next few months are going to play out, just try walking a few miles in Isabel's shoes before you start complaining. And talking of shoes, what Isabel is doing reminds me of that famous Ginger Rogers quote about doing everything that Fred Astaire did in heels backwards. Welcome, Isabel.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. You should be my hype man. That was the best intro ever. Thank you.
Well, welcome aboard, as they say. But just for clarity, where are you broadcasting from and how are you doing in your world?
Yeah, we're broadcasting from Argentina, Buenos Aires, at the moment. We've got me at the table, my dog somewhere over there, half asleep, listening in intently. Things are okay over here for the time being. Unfortunately, we're still seeing cases rising daily, but the lockdown is starting to ease, I think, to try and inject some money back into the local economy. So fingers crossed for the health and safety of everyone, and hopefully we can put an injection back in the small businesses.
Good, good. Okay, well, yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it's like you say, baby steps, and taking it very cautiously as we go, because it looks like it just keeps flaring up in as soon as they take their foot off the brake. But what time is it there, and how's the weather?
We're okay. It's just coming up to midday. We're, of course, okay. In the depths of winter at the moment. It was my birthday a couple of days ago, so I'm used to having a lovely warm, well, English warm summer birthday. And now I've had it with a nice cup of cocoa in my lockdown at home. So yeah, but we're all good. How are things with you? How's everything in the States?
Well, it's similarly, I think it's not a case of putting out fires. It's pretty much a case of just trying to contain the blaze, because it just seems to be such a crazy. All that's required is for people just to lock themselves down, but they refuse to do it, and I think that's going to be the downfall. However, I was talking to somebody today, and I think there are some positives to come out of this belligerence from America, and we can come onto it in a bit. But there is going to be a positive effect on the e-commerce industry in the States. That's my prediction now, is that because people are going to be, this is going to be a prolonged sort of problem for retail. I think retailers are going to get on top of it, and I think the retail industry is going to benefit tremendously from learning very quickly on the ground about the e-commerce industry.
Yeah, it's somewhat morose to say, isn't it? But it'll be, at very least, an interesting case study for in years to come, unfortunately. But we'll see what state the market's in post.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So what's the predominant language out there?
Spanish, apart from Brazil, where we have Portuguese.
And did you have a knowledge of Spanish before going out there?
Very little. I was doing some Spanish lessons in the UK. Of course, anyone that's learned a language later on in life, it's so much easier when you learn it from a younger age. And I'm kicking myself that I didn't follow my mother's advice and sort of, you know, ingrain myself in learning languages when I was younger. But I'm learning slowly but surely. It's such a beautiful language. It's such a romantic language that even when I don't understand people, I'm like, oh, that sounds lovely. I have no idea what you said, but it sounds lovely.
That's fantastic. But before we sort of move into the sort of main meat of the conversation, let's just recap, if that's okay. And just tell us basically what the PRCA does and how it benefits public relations agencies.
Sure. So as you mentioned, the PRCA is the world's largest professional body for PR and communications. We celebrated our 50th birthday last year, so happy birthday, us.
Congratulations.
And thank you so much. The work that we do is, we always bring it back to our ethos, which is making the PR and communications industry a more ethical, reputable, and networked environment and landscape. So we opened up the UK office in 1969, and then we opened MENA out of Dubai in 2016, Southeast Asia out of Singapore in 2018, and then, of course, your wonderful host for the day, me. I moved over here in November of 2019, and then we launched officially in April, so only a few months ago, but it's been an incredible, incredible journey thus far.
I mean, it's almost like hard boiling the whole thing down to a concentrate, isn't it? I mean, it's just amazing the learning curve you must have gone on. But when I first met you a couple of years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago now, but yes, you had a responsibility for the industry groups. And at that time, you were kind of traveling all over the country. And it was pretty hard to know sort of where you'd be from one week to the next. But so what do the groups do? What's the idea of the industry groups?
Yeah, I was the hardest woman to pin down, wasn't I? I was always somewhere in the UK. It was never, you know, like Lisbon or Sao Paulo. It was like Nottingham or Glasgow.
Skiggy.
Yeah, so I ran the groups for, I think it was about 2.5 years, actually. So before that, I was the comms assistant. And then before that, I was actually an apprentice, which is how I got into the PR industry.
Right.
So in 6 years, yeah, apprentice to a director, which is, I mean, it just plays testament to the PRCA and how they allow their team to grow, which has been wonderful.
And obviously for your kind of own abilities to rise to all the challenges you keep getting in front of you.
Oh, I can't toot my own horn. This is why you're here. No, thank you. That's very kind. the groups, there's, I think, about 62 of them at the moment. So there were, I think I left them at 58 and they've added 4 more. I think the moment I was out of there, they said, oh, right, let's add some more groups before Isabel notices. And they cover every sector that one could really imagine. So everything from some sort of apprenticeships and skills all the way through to purpose, B corporations, consumer, corporate, fintech, travel and tourism. Right. And then they're also got the regional and national groups, which is what took me over the country so much. So we have Northern Ireland and Wales and the Scotland group. And the sort of role of those is to have both holistic but also quite specific conversation. I think it can be difficult, especially as, you know, PR and communications is such a dynamic industry. We're sort of never switched off.
Right.
That you wake up, you're checking your emails, you do your day job and more. And it's difficult to find time for that extracurricular learning and networking. So the groups really try to provide that forum for people to have open, honest conversations and hopefully learn from one another.
Sure, sure. And I mean, I guess just as an aside that the whole social distancing is going to play into that, the ability for these companies to sort of network amongst themselves and with each other for a while, I should think.
Yeah, totally. Of course, we've tried to take everything virtual now.
Sure.
There's nothing that can replace face-to-face communication, especially, you know, we work in the communications field. I think we can probably all agree on that. But we all must, in times of crisis, band together and do what we can to carry on supporting one another. And I sincerely hope the PRCA has done that and that we can carry on doing that for the wider industry.
Indeed. Yeah, well, that's nice to hear. And I'm sure you will anyway. I mean, if there's any industry organization that is equipped to be able to do it, it'll be the PRCA. Tell me the story of how did you volunteer yourself for this role?
How did she end up here? Yeah.
What did you do?
I mean, for anyone that knows me, it's such an Isabel story. It came up in a conversation at a team meeting at PRCA HQ in London.
Right.
We are always looking to go into new territories where we're needed and make sure that we can carry on supporting practitioners worldwide. And as I said, we already cover UK, MENA, SCA. We also run ECO, which is the international body. So before we came over to Latin America, we already represented, I think it's 66 countries. We now represent 71 with LATAM included. And Francis, our global director general, said, oh, and, you know, in terms of global expansion, we think Latin America would probably be the next natural step for the organization. So I think the moment the meeting ended, I grabbed my line manager, who's Matt Cartmell, who now runs Carter Communications. And I grabbed him and I said, Matt, I'm going to go for the role. I'm going to go for it. That was sort of it. And then I went to Francis, I think, the next day, and I said, hey, You know how you mentioned briefly, almost as an aside, that maybe at some point you'd think about Latin America? I'll take it.
Wow.
And I think he was kind of a bit blindsided. He sort of said, okay, well, let's take it back a step. Why do you want the role? You know, of course, we'll have to go through somewhat of a more formal process.
Sure.
And to be honest with you, that was just the sort of whirlwind that was the 6 months, carrying on doing the groups, trying to build that and make sure that we put ourselves in Latin America in a strong place. And then I think we made the final decision to move out here about 2 weeks, literally 2 weeks, 10 working days before I had my flight to move out here. So I'm a relatively simple person. I mean, I figured out that my entire life fits into two suitcases, which is quite nice. So I just packed everything in there, said my see you later to everyone, and then we just did it, really.
Wow.
That simple.
Almost quite a Victorian approach to the whole thing, just pack up and go on a grand tour.
Do you know, it's quite a Victorian rough as well, so maybe there's some sort of synergy there, I don't know.
But so what you sort of pitch up there and you grab yourself a really nice cup of coffee or something. I mean, what were your priorities?
So we managed to have a couple of meetings in Argentina, Brazil and Mexico. We did I think we were out here for 9 days. So we spent 3 days in each country doing just a quick visit, getting a sort of lay of the land. And the more and more that we spoke to people, it really cemented the fact that we could be of service here.
Right.
As I mentioned, everything the PRCA does comes down to reputation, ethics, and connecting the landscape, really. And because Latin America is such a vast region, it's super difficult to make generalizations. It's very difficult to do a lot of cross-country communication. As we mentioned, you know, in Europe, I've had colleagues who have gone to Paris for the day for meetings. I've had colleagues who have gone to Lisbon for the day for meetings. If I want to, I mean, I'm only in Argentina. If I want to get to Mexico, I've got a 9.5-hour flight.
Wow.
And I think a lot of people don't realize the sheer geography of the region. So the priority really was to bring a lot more cross-country conversation. There's a very famous quote that says the worst thing about communication is the assumption that it's already been done. And I think that's a problem that probably arises in most continents. And it's exactly the same here. You know, we're all learning how to live in a much more connected world. But that is a process that we're all undertaking together. So that was a big focus. Also to bring data here as well. We have so many census reports and state of the industries in the US, the UK, and the Middle East. And unfortunately, there was nothing over here that looked at all of Latin America. You have some incredible local associations who PRCA LATAM partners with and works very closely with, but nothing that looked at the state of the profession in the entire region.
Right.
And in true PRCA style, if it doesn't exist, then by gosh, we're going to make it exist.
We're going to make it happen.
Exactly. So we have the inaugural PRCA LATAM census in partnership with Provoke Media that's coming out later on this year. And hopefully that's going to really start shining a spotlight on Latin America.
We're, Provoke is Paul Holmes's...
Previously Holmes Report, yep. Yes.
Okay.
I think because, again, of the geography, it's sometimes easier to leave Latin America out of the conversation because of how far we are removed from everything. And I hope that by being over here and bringing more data, more information to the region, we can start playing with the big boys over in MENA, in the North America and Southeast Asia, because the work and the talent in Latin America is just unfathomable. It's incredible.
Wow. Excellent. And obviously, the commitment's there for a long term. You're in for the long haul on this.
Oh, we're here for the long haul. My dog moved over here from London. I can't put him on another flight. Yeah.
So, I mean, what are the big differences between sort of doing business in the UK and dealing with the kind of Latin American PR agencies? I mean, is the industry very different at all? Or
I think you find globally there are a lot of similarities. The one thing that really struck me over here was how many SMEs there are. And before this call, I was having a look because I thought to myself, oh, SMEs, I know what that means to me, but what does that mean to the rest of the world? And as I was looking online, an SME is described differently in almost every country. So that in itself is a bit of an issue. But what I mean by that is sort of a small to medium enterprise, so probably around, let's say, less than 40 people if we just go by headcount instead of turnover.
Right.
And what you have over here is you hear about those SMEs a lot more than I found you do in any other continent. So when we came over here, what we found quite quickly was when you're in the UK, although when you have campaigns, you might hear about the Edelmans, you always hear about the networked agencies, the H&Ks, the Webbers. Over here, you have a lot more of those SMEs that always seem to crop up in conversation.
Okay.
I think that's partly due to businesses over here having a really strong sense of who they are. I think that's done because they are smaller teams and they're able to be a lot more nimble. You don't find as many agencies that say we do corporate and consumer and pharma and lifestyle. They're much more focused on one discipline. The issue that we have over here at the moment is that AVEs still play a huge part in the evaluation process. So we're talking over 75% of evaluation is done by using AVEs.
Right.
The FCA is working constantly with AMEC. I know they released Barcelona Principles 3.0 just a couple of weeks ago from when we're recording. So we're hoping that together with Latin America, we can go on a journey to better understand why it's so important to use different evaluation metrics. And again, we hope that that's going to shine a spotlight more on the region.
Right. Well, it's I was going to come on to that, and it's you nicely laid that set that up for me actually, because obviously in the US and the UK we're kind of witnessing the kind of slow motion collapse of the traditional kind of media infrastructure, and newspapers losing circulation, and you know, TV stations losing ratings to like streaming services or whatever. But I mean, what about the media consumption in Latin America? I mean, is it the same as the UK and the USA with kind of lots of disparate newspapers and TV stations, etc.?
So I think yes. I'll probably prerequisite by saying, because I'm not a fluent Spanish speaker yet, my view might not be as accurate as somebody that is.
Right.
But what I've definitely seen as part of the pandemic is a rise in the media consumption online. So talk radio is huge over here. I mean, you get on any of the buses or in any taxis, and they've always got talk radio on. So it's always quite a good way to pick up on some of the Spanish.
Right.
And I think one of the reasons that talk radio and things like online consumption have risen during the pandemic is because Latin America has such a social culture to it. And I don't think that's a generalization. It's a very Latin American thing. You know, you see your friends, you give them a hug, you give them a kiss on the cheek, much more so than, you know, I'd go in for a business meeting and people would say, "Oh, Isabel," and give me a hug. I'm thinking, hello. It's a far cry from like a cold handshake in the UK. So I think going from that extreme to being in lockdown has really forced people to reevaluate how they consume their media.
Right.
You've got newspapers like La Nación, which is huge here in Argentina, but there aren't that many regional publications. I think it's similar to the UK as well, actually, talking about newspapers. There's a lot of politics both in and of papers. So what I mean by that is, not only is politics very widely spoken about and actually in the pages of the publication, but there are definitely left-wing and right-wing newspapers.
Okay, yeah.
And especially with lockdown going on here in Argentina, there's been some protests, and a lot of that has been brought back to the political environment. So it'll be very interesting to see in the coming months what actually happens with print media and if the political alignments after lockdown are going to affect that.
So, I mean, it still is pretty much, I mean, the political situation is very much part of the national dialogue as well. So, so that's, definitely. You know, I think, you know, it's a bit of a dumb question, really, because I think a pandemic is enough to bring all politics to the fore anyway, isn't it, really? Somebody's going to blame someone.
Have you found that as well in the US recently?
Oh, that's crazy. I mean, because everybody is so... it's a binary thing, you know. You're either on the left or on the right in terms of your view, and it's very, very divisive, and you know, either side is you know, quite happy to try and pin blame on the other side for, you know, for all the failings. But you know, I think ultimately, however we come out of this, it's not going to be one political party to sort it out. It needs to be a group effort. So, you know, we'll see how things go. But I hope that we can rise above the divided parties and come up with a solution, and then get back to fighting afterwards. You know,
the optimism and then the realism. There. Yeah, absolutely.
So what about talking about the PR scene over there? I mean, who are the kind of big dogs on the block, the big agency networks? Are they all present out there as you would expect?
Yeah, they're all present out here. The only thing that's different is probably their disciplines. As I mentioned, it's not as normal to have an agency that will cover every sort of brand's potential needs. You have,
right.
For example, H&K over here, just to pull one, has a huge, huge public affairs department. So in the UK, I'm sure most people would know them for PR, but over here it's mainly public affairs.
Right.
So it's much more focused. We mentioned the SMEs as well, definitely. But I think a lot of it comes down to, I don't want it to be like sort of a cop-out of an answer, but because it's such a vast region, it's so difficult to make generalizations and to say X company does this and Y company does that. But PRC LATAM has a great range of members who cover quite a lot of sectors. So, sure. I mean, if anyone's interested to find out a bit more about the market, I would just suggest having a look on the PRC LATAM website. You can see all of our members on there, and that will kind of demonstrate the breadth of the work that's going on over here, because it's truly incredible.
And I mean, does it? I mean, you allude to it anyway, but I mean, does it mirror what's happening in sort of the UK and the US, where you've got very kind of like vertical sectors that there are specialists working in, you know, like food and drink or investor relations or whatever? I mean, are there those kind of vertical specialists as well?
Yeah, totally. I think you get. So let's say, I would say Brazil is mostly public affairs. Brazil would be the hub of Latin America for public affairs. In Mexico, a lot of influencer relations and quite digital. In Argentina, I would say it's a lot of strategy and creative-led campaign work. Ecuador, huge on corp comms. Chile, marketing communications. I mean, if we could merge them all into just one country, we'd be unstoppable.
So, I mean, are there sort of their unique? I mean, you basically said, but I mean, are there any sort of parts of the PR industry over there that you don't really see very, very sort of very predominant in the UK and the US? I mean, are there things that they're doing over there that they should be doing over here?
Yes.
Okay.
I think a lot of it comes down to the warmth and the openness of people in general over here. Leonardo da Vinci said, you know, knowing is not enough, we must apply. Being willing is not enough, we must do. And I think that really transcends into business, because having that warmth and openness with your colleagues, with your teams, whether that's linear or horizontal, allows you to build a really strong sense of internal communications and team morale. I don't find that as much in the UK, and we really in Latin America use that strength to as an advantage.
Right.
It's very, very friendly. You know, everyone takes time in the morning to go around the entire office and say hello to people. I mean, I went to a client's office once and we spent genuinely 45 minutes on two floors meeting every person in the office. And, you know, I was just thinking, my gosh, you know, when I go for meetings sometimes in the UK, it's get in, get out. I don't know, maybe that's just with me or if it's a more general thing. But that sharing of culture and experiences and ideas, and I guess realizing that we all occupy the same space is something that at least I think it is unique. You must have conversations with people from all over the world. Maybe you're better placed to talk about uniqueness in regions.
Well, no, that's why I always like to, you know, I always like to speak to people that have got their boots on the ground over there, because I think we can make a lot of assumptions that aren't, you know, I mean, I learned very early on about, you know, sort of doing business in the US, you know, how different it was and how you can make assumptions about a country or about a, you know, a city and be completely wrong. So yeah, it's always important. And I mean, I guess that kind of, you know, what you were just saying about the sort of the more social aspect of it. I mean, not trying to be too trite about it, but I think that probably translates into what we see in the sporting arena with a lot of sort of Latin American countries. You know, the way that they compete is very, it's very kind of never say die, and it's very, there seems to be a lot more kind of bonding there. So I think, you know, especially the football teams, you know, could have a lot that they could bring in terms of that kind of understanding and that bonding.
Oh, totally. Our the PRC LATAM chairman, Gustavo Avabush, he's the regional director for Latin America for Ketchum, and he said the other day when we were talking about the pandemic, mm-hmm. as an entire region, Latin America is so used to being in crisis. you know, whether it's social or economic or political, there's never really a dull moment over here. So there is an extreme sense of unity and bonding that I don't want it to sound fluffy, but you can feel it. You know,
yeah.
There's an energy over here that is really quite all-encompassing, and it's an absolute honour to be a part of it. So, yeah, completely. I've even gone to a Boca women's match, and they have really, really nice stadium, and there's people in, like, blue and yellow wigs. Blue and yellow are their colours, and they're banging drums, and there's vuvuzelas, and there's yellow and blue smoke coming out of everywhere.
Lovely.
And it's just the passion that they put into everything they do is intoxicating, intoxicating.
You know, sometimes it can be mistaken for, you know, that kind of enthusiasm being a waste of energy. But I think, you know, when it comes down to having your backs against the wall and stuff, then, you know, having a positive group mental attitude to these sorts of things, you know, can definitely make a difference. And I think it can gel people together, you know, in terms of trying to get people to in terms of compliance, you know, getting them to understand that they need to be indoors for a month or 2 months or whatever for the greater good, rather than, mm-hmm. you know, everybody running around saying, well, it's my, you know, it's my right to be independent, so I'm going to do it, you know. So, that makes a lot of sense. And so, I mean, looking a bit longer term, and hopefully we will climb out of this fairly soon, in the next few months at least. I mean, what's going to be the PRCA's kind of mission and objectives over the next 24 months?
I think that's an interesting question. It'll be interesting to see whether or not the pandemic really shapes a narrative for us over here. I guess it kind of depends on what the situation looks like in the coming months.
Right.
of course, we've already seen a devastating loss of life throughout the world, and especially in Brazil and Mexico and Latin America, things have been pretty dire. So for us at the moment, the main focus is really just ensuring that we support and protect the wider industry, not just our members, as much as possible. So whatever resources that we can develop and create for them, we are doing so. By the time this goes out, we'll have announced as well that we're giving 2020 graduates in Latin America free membership for a year to try and encourage them to get involved, to get training courses, to get involved in events and really help start building them to go into a career, because the economic situation over here after COVID is going to be difficult.
Yes.
And I guess probably longer term than that for us, it's wanting to make sure that people know we're here. In the UK, as I mentioned, you know, 50 years is a long time to have been supporting an industry, and we're very grateful that the industry has allowed us to do that for so long. And now it's about making sure practitioners over here know that we are here, know that we're here to support them, and just to become the port of call, really, for brands and agencies, so that that we can really make the most out of everything that's going on here. So that's my aim, at least. I'm sure Francis has something much more eloquent, but I just want to support people, really. Yeah.
Well, that's a noble cause to start with anyway. Now, you also have a responsibility for the US operation as well, I understand.
I do.
Could you just tell us basically what's involved in that? And by the way, having Googled PRCA from the US, it's very funny to come up with the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association, which must be... it must be a pretty similar job, really, holding onto a bucking bronco.
Yeah, we both constantly wearing spurs and, you know, having to whip people into shape. Yeah,
with clowns running around all over the place.
Just mess everywhere. So the USA stuff's actually been so interesting. So it's really come from our members on the ground over in the USA, which has been so wonderful to see, that there's appetite for what the PRCA does worldwide to lend itself to North America, which is awesome. I'm working with an awesome team of people, which are our PRCA USA advisory board. Shout out to you guys, who are supporting on our efforts to create the first ever PRCA USA member symposium, which will be taking place in May of 2021.
Okay.
I think COVID has kind of meant that everyone has to wear so many more hats. You know, we've said, we put no too fine point on it. It's going to be a difficult economic situation for the industry when we come out of this. So my job as an employee of the PRCA and an advocate for the work that we do is really just to make sure that worldwide the industry has as much support as our resources can provide them. And as you mentioned with the cowboys, if there's any cowboys listening, hit me up. We can do like a reciprocal membership deal. We'd love some of you guys on board. Yeah.
Well, I mean, basically, I mean, because the reason I ask is, I mean, trade bodies tend to sort of, you know, in the past have a reputation as being a kind of an obligatory thing that you needed to belong to in order to get the credibility, you know, in the industry. But obviously, you've got quite a different and quite disparate corporate landscape now. And trade bodies are kind of having to sort of move with the times there. So, I mean, what's the PRCA doing now that kind of, you know, sort of acknowledges the new normal in terms of the kind of new technologies and the growth of the SME market, etc.?
I think that's a really interesting point that you made there. You know, it's up to trade bodies to not only keep up with the times, but also to be the thought leaders and to be the instigators of those change. You know, I like to think of us as sort of the couture of the world. You know, it's up to us to tell people where we're moving toward and prepare them so they can be in the best possible position to gain the right resources to keep themselves on top of their game. I mean, almost everything I do comes back to my lovely groups in the UK.
Sure.
But developing things like the entrepreneur group, the marketing communications group, the emerging markets group, evaluation group, all of those are there to put people into the best possible mindset to deal with the future. I think sometimes we can be under the illusion that to be an entrepreneur or to take part in an evaluation session, we have to be starting up our own agency, or we have to work in a measurement and evaluation part of the business. I don't think that's true whatsoever. And I think this pandemic has really brought to light the fact that, unfortunately or fortunately, you have to be pretty au fait with everything now. You know, we're living in the most globalized world as it's ever been, and tomorrow it'll be even more globalized. So it's up to us as individuals to really put our best foot forward and to take part in things. I mean, we've got a two-day digital masterclass, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, and that's completely sold out. And that's wonderful to hear, you know, that people not only want that content, but are actually investing their time and energy into saying, do you know what, it's not good enough to you know, maybe read half a blog about something and Google a couple of key phrases, but to be an active and willing participant in your own future. And just fantastic to hear. But I think everything just comes down to, I hate the word because I just hear it everywhere, but purpose. I think it does. Why are you doing what you're doing? If you're working for an agency where digital technology or digital, or you don't work in tech whatsoever, is it worth your time and resources to invest a lot into learning those disciplines? Or are you better off taking a backseat on that and investing time and efforts into somewhere else? And that's a discussion that businesses and individuals need to have with themselves. And then hopefully they just know that, I'm sure one of PRCA's 150 training courses will cover whatever aspect they want to get involved in.
Yeah, and I guess I will amplify what the point that you made by basically we've had a couple of guests on recently where we've been talking about the point of, or the necessity of being genuine, you know, and having and being credible in the market. So not just, like you say, just, you know, whipping off a press release and pulling out a few sort of buzz phrases and letting it be. I think the way that the PR market has now developed and the way that the consumer has now developed is that you will be fact checked live, you know, for whatever it is you're doing, you're going to be fact checked. And if you're not, you know, doing what they expect you to do, you'll very quickly get caught out. So, you know, I think it helps to have specialists in, you know, in various areas and to, you know, to sort of to keep the market going. But that's good news. And we will put all of the information about the sort of all the forthcoming activities we'll do in the show notes as well, which I strongly advise people look at and obviously contact you for sort of more information as we go through. So pandemic aside, I mean, did you actually get a chance to sort of enjoy the sort of cultural life there? And obviously revive it at some point. I mean, is there stuff you're looking forward to?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I worked out the other day, I've been here in lockdown longer than I've been here as a free man, so to speak. which is a little bit upsetting, but you know, as you said before, it's just about doing what's best for the wider population. And of course, you know, the worst thing that you could do is put others at risk by just being a bit of an asshole. So staying very much inside, but I'm looking forward very much to seeing people again, having more time with, you know, face-to-face time with people. It's a very densely populated city, and I mean, I hope my microphone hasn't picked it up too much, but you know, there's always noises outside. You know, it's a very, very noisy place, but there are these very kind of bizarre oasis of calm places as well. There's a lot of greenery, beautiful trees everywhere. You know, we've got palm trees in the middle of the streets, which is pretty crazy to see. So I'm very much looking forward to getting back out. Yeah,
I bet. So, I mean, obviously under lockdown, I guess you've been, like the rest of us, turning to all kind of online services and stuff like that. I mean, what do you like to do when you sort of switch off when you're not wearing the PRCA hat? I mean, are there sort of podcasts and TV shows that you watch just to keep your sanity?
Yeah, I mean, the PRCA hat never comes off, unfortunately. Okay. I think it is difficult to switch off, isn't it? Especially now, we live, we work, we play, we sleep all in the same space. And I think all too often people sort of gloss over the fact that it is negatively impacting their mental health. I'm very, very fortunate to work for PRCA, you know, an organization that recognizes the importance of mental health in individuals. I would recommend that everyone goes and checks out the PRCA Mental Health Toolkit as well that we've produced. You know, it's always important to go and check in with people as well. But thankfully, I've got my dog here. So he's kind of how we switch off together. We maybe just watch some TV together. Community is one that I absolutely adore. If you haven't checked it out, a guy called Dan Harmon's one of the writers, and he's just hilarious.
That's the curse. Yeah, I was going to say, like Parks and Rec type thing, isn't it?
Kind of like that. Yeah. It's just wonderful. You know, it's hilarious, and you know, we all like to laugh. Who doesn't love to be made to laugh? And then on the flip side, podcast. So this one's a bit of an odd one, but it's called Makeup, Masking and Murder. It explores beauty and true crime.
Wow. I've seen or heard Martinis and Murder, but not this one. Go on, yeah. Explain more.
A woman who runs it, and she talks through not only different beauty tips and beauty advice, but there's also a video version where she's doing her makeup at the same time, and she talks you through true crime stories.
Wow.
And they're like 10, 15 minutes a piece. So, you know, it's the sort of thing that if you've just had a very difficult moment, or, you know, you've just had to put together like an entire newsletter or something like that, and you just think, you know what, I deserve 10 minutes, make a coffee and just chill out. They're great to listen to, so yeah.
Fantastic. Excellent. Well, that's good. Well, we'll certainly check that one out, and we'll put the link for that. That sounds fun for everybody as well.
Sure.
But so we are putting together a Spotify playlist of all of our guests' sort of favorite desert island discs. We're making no bones about the fact that we stole that from the BBC, but seeing as I paid so much for my license fee over the years, I think I deserve that. They can give me that. But so, a desert island disc, name one.
I am just an odd about this one, but I watched Billy Elliot, which is my favourite film ever, the other day, and reminded of Cosmic Dancer by T-Rex.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
There's just something in the lyrics, you know, that... I think, you know, as human beings, we're all just traversing the earth, trying to be passionate about something and love something more than we ever thought we possibly could. And there's just something in the lyrics that instills that sense of passion, and it just gets me riled up every time. So, yeah,
I was dancing since I was 12.
Yeah, dance myself right out the womb. It's just... Oh.
Fantastic.
Beautiful.
Still miss him. Still miss Mark Bolan, but still there. Yeah. We go. But so that's great. And do you have a book that you would recommend people read?
I do, and I've got a right. So I want to. I was going to say something at first, like deeply thrilling, sort of the metamorphosis, do like a Franz Kafka moment, and then I was going to do something seminal. George Orwell 1984, or maybe like, you know, Margaret Atwood, something political. But the more I thought about it, my favourite book is Katie Morag Delivers the Mail.
Okay. Explain.
The Katie Morag book series aimed at kids. But I remember my mum used to sit on the end of my bed, and I'd make her do different voices for all of the different characters. And there's just something... You know, especially at the moment, we all want to feel a sense of safety and warmth and calm. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, you know what? I have no issues with going on a professional podcast and telling people my desert island book would be one that my mum used to read to me.
If it has I think that's what makes it. As long as it's got an emotional attachment, I think that makes it even more profound. So,
that's
great. Why not? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, okay, on to any other business. Your chance to plug. I think you almost did anyway. But upcoming events for the PRCA, and how can people reach you if they want to email and stuff?
Yeah, you can tell I worked in comms for too long. Plug everything along the way.
Got in early.
Well, the first thing that I want to plug is our new REEB, which is the Race and Ethnicity Equity Board, which PRCA has developed with Barbara Phillips heading it up. We made a series of commitments a couple of months ago to tackle the racial inequality within our industry. And this is the first PRCA taken step to tackling that. We've got our LATAM conference on the 21st of October, information coming out about that very soon. As I mentioned, the May symposium in 2021, so keep your eye out for that. I'm on all social media, just type in Isabel Aris Smith and you'll find this guy, maybe with blue hair, maybe pink hair, maybe brown hair, who knows?
It changes for the week, does it? Fantastic.
It does, but the smile's always there, and that's how you can recognise me.
Well, I tell you what, Isabel, I couldn't imagine anybody more perfect for the role as a trailblazer for the PRCA. I think you've done a fantastic job, and you're a great spokesman for the industry, and for the PRCA as well. And I'm sure Francis does appreciate everything that you're doing as well.
I'm welling up a bit. Sorry, thank you. That's so kind.
But it would be lovely to stay on top of this, and we can we'll catch up with you, find out how the events go, and obviously we will have all the information in the show notes underneath, so people know how to get hold of you. Just remains for me to say thank you so much. You've been an absolutely perfect guest, and you got dressed for us as well, which is fantastic, because it's so nice, and especially under lockdown, because most people just get their hair done and that's about it, but you went full on, so congratulations.
I mean, I brushed my hair. You don't know what's going on like below the waist.
That's fantastic. Well, listen, thank you very much, Isabel. Appreciate you putting some time aside. Have a great evening, which I guess is probably sooner than mine, but we'll hopefully catch up again soon, and we'll hopefully under better circumstances. So thanks very much, Isabel. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thanks.
Bye bye.
Gracias, Isabel, and buena suerte and fortuna. Well, that was fun. I'd like to thank the PRCA for their support, and I sincerely wish Isabel and her colleagues all the best with the upcoming events, all of which are detailed in the show notes on the website at thefuelpodcast.com. That's THEFUEL podcast.com. My thanks to Donna on the mixing desk, Matt on the keyboard, Peter Banks and Barney, and new boy Matt Bullard for the tunes. But mostly thanks to you, our lovely listeners, who have helped make The Fuel Podcast the number one new business show. So thank you very much. Join us next time on The Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, when we'll be entertaining you with songs and sketches and jokes old and new, as well as a healthy dose of insight for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?